Welcome to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Mishpatim, the Parsha of Mishpatim, our Aliyah. The first Aliyah is 19 Psukim, long running from a Perek Chof Aleph, Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Yud. The Parsha as a whole contains 118 Psukim. The focus of our Aliyah is Eved Ivri, the Hebrew bondsman, and personal responsibility. Let's take a look at a general overview and then we'll jump into some points to ponder. The parasha starts off with the words Ve'ele Hamishpatim Asher Tosim Lifneim. These are the laws that you'll place in front of them. Moshe is told. The first section deals with what's called an Eved Ivri, the Hebrew bondsman, who is a Israelite who is sold into slavery. He works for up till the end of the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. And if he comes in alone, he goes out alone. If he is if he comes in with a wife, he leaves with his wife. We hear that he can also be married. The master can marry him to a maidservant during the time that he is in bondage. At the end of the 6 years, he's supposed to go out. If he says to the master, "I want to stay," then in that case, the master has to present him in front of the court, and they will pierce his ear. And he'll serve him forever, understood in halacha to be till the 50th year. We then hear about the Amma Ivriya. This is the Hebrew bondswoman. This is a young lady who works in service, indentured servant to another person. Till either we hear a few pathways out, whether it be that she gains her own freedom, whether it is that she is married to somebody in the master's household, and there's a lot of protections which are put into place. We hear about this as to the responsibilities the master has towards his Amma Ivriya. We then hear a few other laws, Makei Ish Vamesh Mos Yumos, that if a person murders, then they will be put to death. But if Loit Asher Loit Salav Elokim Inali Adoy, that a person who was not planning to kill, Vashem tilted their hands, then there's going to be a place for that such a person, an unintentional murder, to go. That's with a hint to the Arya Mekla, to the cities of refuge. Then we talk to, then we hear about a person who does murder intentionally will be taken from the altar. Me'im Mizbechi Tikochen Elamus. They'll be taken from the altar for, that they're seeking refuge from. A person who hits their parents will die. A person who kidnaps another person and sells them will be put to death. A person who curses his parents will be put to death. And then finally we hear if there's a fight between people and one person hits the other one, whether it be with their hand or an implement, and the person is injured but doesn't die, in that case, there are certain payments which have to be paid. There's no capital case because the person lived. But there's certain payments that need to be made. So this is the general overview of our Aliyah, some very basic civil laws of society towards the end of the Aliyah, and then we have the Eved Ivri and the Amma Ivriya at the beginning of the Aliyah. So a few points to ponder. Number one is, why is this whole parasha here in the first place? Why is this the next step right after Sinai? So Rashi explains that we just finished talking about the laws of the Mizbeach, the altar, coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should know that when the Torah uses the letter Vav to connect Ve'eleh HaMashpatim, clearly the two ideas are connected. And that is the laws, or the social laws governing society, are connected to the Mizbeach, to the altar, to Hashem, which means the two roles of law, to govern the relationship between ourselves and our Creator, and the laws that govern ourselves and our colleagues, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Chavero, are integrally related, both the Mizbeach, coming close to Hashem, and the laws, which is why, says Rashi, that the Sanhedrin, which is where the assembly of the great Sanhedrin HaGadol, the great court, would be actually in the Lishka HaGazis, which is a particular chamber, this hewn chamber, which is right adjacent to the Mizbeach. I would just argue that it goes further. You see that Hashem is trying to tell us that these two systems are connected to each other. We have thought that they're disconnected. The ritual is separate to social, and the Torah is telling us that the two are connected to each other. However, the Torah also emphasizes the two are also in their own silos at the same time. So for instance, when we see an overlap later on in the Aliyah where a person murders another but seeks refuge on the Mizbeach, so they seek refuge in the ritual relationship place, a part of the law, that does not work. So the altar and the court are connected, but they are not going to necessarily offer clemency one for the other. The question really is why is the Eved Ivri the first law? Why is the first of all the laws chosen, the one of this Hebrew bondsman? So the Ramban explains in a very beautiful idea, so this emphasizes the ideas, the concepts of all the most important underpinnings of the Torah, the cycle of sevens, the cycle, the idea of freedom, the idea that Hashem created the world, which is built into the cycle. That means to say that when people work, it's a seven-day cycle, like it is the same cycle of Shabbos. So this it gets to the very underpinnings of what freedom means, what it means to be free, what it means to serve, what it means to have a greater system of knowing that Hashem is in the world. However, Rav Hirsch makes a very interesting point, and this is a methodological point, which is very, very important to appreciate. And that is, there's two parts to Torah. There's the Torah Sheba'al Peh and the Torah Shebichsav, the Oral Torah and the Written Torah. The Written Torah, of course, includes Aseret HaDibros and the scroll of the Torah itself, which was actually written down. The Torah Sheba'al Peh, of course, it has numerous different parts to it, but we'll take for a moment the most basic part of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is the understanding the tradition, which helps us explain what the Torah Shebichsav means. So, for instance, when the Torah tells us to keep Shabbos, the Oral Torah tells us what is Shabbos actually mean. When the Torah tells us to take a pre-Eitz Hadar, the Oral Torah explains that refers to a Sitrin, an Esrog. So there's a lot of parts where the Torah Sheba'al Peh explains what the actual Torah Shebichsav was doing. So what's the relationship between those two? Generally speaking, we have the idea, we understand that there are two separate realms. The main point is the Torah Shebichsav, and the Torah Sheba'al Peh is explaining and augmenting to be able to understand what the Torah Shebichsav is saying. However, Rav Hirsch says, what happens if we were to conceptualize it in the reverse? If you ever had the opportunity, la havdil, of going to, one's in college, an advanced course, let's say in physics, la havdil, and one goes to the lecture, and one takes notes, one writes notes down in one's binder, and one comes out of the lecture. Now, let's say somebody asks to borrow your lecture notes. So you being a very, altruistic individual, you give your notes to the other person. Will it really help them? The answer is somewhat, meaning they'll be able to see the notes, but really, to really have understood what went on in that physics lab or in that course, you need to have actually been there. When you were there, then the notes make sense. That NB, that underline, that asterisk in the margin, all those different pieces make sense now because you were at the lecture. In a certain sense, says Rav Hirsch, the main point of the conveying of Torah was the experience, the lecture. The Torah, that was the experience of Sinai. That's the Torah Sheba'al Peh. But the lecture notes, the notes to help us remind us in recreating that experience, is the Torah Shebichsav, which is why we pay careful attention to the lecture notes. So that being the case, every little detail is not actually, we sometimes question the details. Is this the way you publish a textbook? And I have to ask what people say, is this the most logical law to have first? Rav Hirsch says, no. If you're at the lecture, you are to understand. And this is just a note to remind us of this part of that experience of what the Torah system is. So as an example, Rav Hirsch says, the first law about the Hebrew slave, the Hebrew, the bondsman, is the idea that Hashem talked about the dignity of the human being. And it starts with the exceptional case in the lecture notes, in the Torah Shebichsav, where you're talking about the dignity of a criminal, a person who requires rehabilitation in society, a person who's been given a second chance. That's where the notes were to identify the exceptional case of understanding the human condition of dignity. That's what's being described over here as well. Now, if you notice something interesting, when you look at all these the laws by the Eved Ivri, and certainly augmented by Chazal, the Torah Sheba'al Peh, there are a lot of interesting halachas. You need to provide them with food and shelter. You need to feed them before yourself. You need to, let's say there's only one pillow to be had, the Gemara says, that one gives that pillow to the Eved Ivri. In a certain sense, the Gemara says that a person who buys an Eved Ivri, kana adon la'atzmoy, buys a master for themselves. There's so many responsibilities. Now, here's an interesting thing. When the Torah talks about a society, it does not talk about rights. It talks about obligations. You want to have a slave? Here are your obligations to the slave. And even if you think about the framing of murder, which is what the next law, it's deemed not as my right to live, but your responsibility to protect the lives of those around you. Hurting parents, like, it's not about the parents having rights against their children, it's about the children having responsibilities to their parents. And this is fascinating because every right really is an obligation. My right to life is your responsibility not to harm life. But it's interesting that as opposed to, let's say, for instance, in the Declaration of Independence, where in America, which is truly a magnificent country, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their creator by certain unalienable rights, among those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The starting point is that every person has rights, and let's protect the rights of the individual and the right of society. In Judaism, it starts with obligations. What difference does it make, you ask? The answer is it a society of givers or is it a society of takers? You have a society which enshrines the value of rights, then everybody says, well, wait a second, I deserve this. I deserve that. I'm going to sue because I did not get what it was that I wanted. In a society which is governed by Eilei HaMishpatim, these are the laws, this is what you have the responsibility to. It comes out with almost the same equation in terms of the basic social law. There are certain things that my right to life is your responsibility to protect life. In the end of the day, it creates a society of people who are responsible for each other. That's a very important distinction to be thinking about in terms of this. Many years ago, in John Gray's book, Men Off of Mars and Women Off of Venus, they used to have a subtitle. Now, has since been removed, but it used to be a practical guide in improving communication and getting what you want in your relationship. Well, if that's your attitude to marriage, that's not going to be a very good attitude, because marriage is not about getting what you want out of your relationship. It doesn't work like that with our spouses, and it certainly does not work like that with God. That's what the Mishpatim is here are your responsibilities. Moving on to another question. Why does the Eved Ivri have his ear pierced? Out of all things, why is this the fitting punishment for a person who wants to stay? Rashi says, because let's examine how an Eved Ivri got into this circumstance in the first place. One is because the person could have been poor, and this is a rehabilitation program to allow them to earn enough money to pay back their creditors to get back on their 2 feet. That's one possibility. The other is that the person stole and did not have the money to repay, so Beis Din sells this person to repay their debts to be able to rehabilitate them. Those are the two options. Rashi says, either way, when the person decides that he wants to stay as a servant, essentially he has disregarded either one of two commandments. Either he disregarded what he had heard at Sinai, which is lo sigzol, a person should not steal, or the person disregarded ki avodaihem. You are my servants, says Hashem to the nation of Israel. You're not servants to other servants. You cannot subjugate yourself to another person. You've forgotten where you are. You've forgotten that you're a free person. That's why the ear, which heard these laws, is the one that is, in fact, pierced. And later on, as we move into the Aliyah, where it talks about the person who's an accidental murderer, we hear the words, V'alokim inali yadoi, Hashem tilted their hand. That seems against all the principles that we hold to be true about free will, that a person has the opportunity to choose. Wait a second, why is God leaning in over here? The Gemara in Makos, Dav Yudam Beis, tells us that, in fact, the Pasuk is referring to a very specific case, where it talks about two people, two murderers. One is an intentional murderer and one is an unintentional murderer. Both got out scot-free, whether there were no witnesses, the circumstance didn't provide, there was a technicality, whatever it is, that they are no longer getting the justice that they so deserve. They both come to the same inn. The one who is the intentional murderer is sitting underneath the ladder. The one who is the unintentional murderer is going down that ladder and falls off, killing the person underneath him. In that case, because it's in a public setting, the one who is the unintentional murderer now has to go to God, is getting his meat, and the person who is the murderer gets killed. Which means to say, yes, there are times where Hashem will tilt our hands to do things, but not because we're undeserving. We become the vehicle to something which we already were deserving as well. Now, the other way the Gemara puts this is Megagalin Choiv al Yedei Chayev. Those who have already demerits are the ones who are going to perform further negative behaviors in society. They'll be the vehicles to those as well. So there's the balance of a person making a choice and the balance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu moving the system along in order to facilitate the necessary justice as well. Finally, one last question in Aliyah is that at the end of the Aliyah, we hear about a person harming another person, and we hear about a lot of payments. What are those payments that a person is supposed to pay? So Rashi explains from the last two Psukim in Aliyah, Pasuk Yud Ches and Yud Tes, there are five payments, based on Gemara's in Baba Kama, that a person is responsible to pay when a person harms another person. One is nezek, that's the basic physical damage that's created on the person. The person bruises their arm, chops off a finger, God forbid. All these things, there's a monetary value for that. Sheves, it means the unemployment. The person cannot work for X amount of time. That is evaluated. And the question is, what they're evaluated at? What level of workmanship are they evaluated at? Very interesting discussion that the Gemara has in Baba Kama. Then there's ripoy, hospital bills. That's pretty simple, pretty standard. Boishes is an embarrassment. So the person is embarrassed. And there are opinions who say, this is our call of fear, mevayesh or misbayesh. It depends on the level of the person who's doing the embarrassing and the person who is embarrassed, because that would differ depending on how high a status in society either one of them are. And finally, tsar, the amount that of pain that a person underwent. These are the five payments that a person would have to pay, which are almost explicit in these last two psukim. With this, we close the first aliyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.